This episode of Stage 9 is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Stage 9, Trek FM show about the people who make Star Trek. I'm Mike.
I'm John.
And today we're going to be talking about a weird little thing which exists. It's very hard to describe, I think, in a lot of ways. But it is a new television movie?
Property.
All three of those things? The Saint, which was a pilot for a new television show, which was produced, I believe, in the year 2013. And it was supposed to be a remake of the classic series starring Roger Moore and all that good stuff. And the reason why it's of interest to us is that it was created or developed or whatever, written by Jesse Alexander, who has worked on Discovery. And it's one of those things where you'd always see it listed in his like IMDb credits and think, that looks interesting, you know? And you always think like, boy, there's all these failed pilots around. Why doesn't anyone ever release those, right?
You could get great jokes like, you know, Mama Tomato with the baby tomato.
Ketchup.
It's a Pulp Fiction joke, everybody, in case you haven't seen Pulp Fiction.
Seen Pulp Fiction, watch that.
Yeah, why? No, why haven't you seen it yet?
Stop listening to us right now and watch Pulp Fiction. Which, by the way, you know, it does fit into Star Trek continuity, so there you go.
Yeah, that's right. Of course, yes, it does. Yes, it does.
But as far as The Saint is concerned, okay, one of the other things which intrigued me about this, and I vaguely remember this from back in the day, and when I saw it pop up on Netflix, because it just popped up on Netflix, I was like, oh, The Saint. Wait, that was Jesse Alexander's show. Because I remember, like, when they first, you know, revealed that Alexander was working on Discovery, I was like, let's try to find something that he did, which is manageable, you know. I mean, I know he did Eight-Legged Freaks, which is, you know, a mildly entertaining movie, and he's done...
You get a couple of giggles out of it.
Yeah, you know, and he also did a lot of work on Alias. We did that two-parter, The Box, starring the director of Pulp Fiction,
Quentin Tarantino.
But, you know, it was like, oh, this Saint thing seems like it would be great because it's his creation, so you really get to hear his voice and everything. And the other thing which was intriguing about it was that it was directed by Simon West. And I had kind of forgotten that. But when I saw it on Netflix and I clicked on it, it said, you know, written by Jesse Alexander. I'm like, cool. That's it. And then it says directed by Simon West. And I'm like, oh, yeah. For those people who don't know, Simon West is the director of Con Air, one of the best movies ever made.
It's a pretty fantastic film. It really, truly is.
It is. And, you know, he's also made a number of other movies like The General's Daughter and stuff like that. But Con Air is his masterpiece. And, you know, I was very, very excited by the idea of seeing some more Simon West. And I think I immediately texted you and said, we got to do this on the show. Mm-hmm. This is amazing. I can't believe this thing is here. you know?
Yes.
Yeah. And then we watched it. But before we get into that, because there's some interesting little weird stuff going on. But before we get into that, are you a fan of The Saint?
You know, I don't have a lot of memory of the TV show. You know, it would have been on syndication or whatever. I was aware of it enough that when the Val Kilmer movie came out, I saw the Val Kilmer movie, which was not great. But I'm sure I've told this story numerous times over the years, but I have a friend, Joey, and we used to mock the Val Kilmer version of The Saint. Because there was one bit in the actual preview where he's doing this terrible like Euro trash accent sort of thing. He's like, "My name is Bruno Hartenfaust," and Joey and I would just tease. We'd call each other up and just be like, "My name is Bruno." I was like, "Ha ha ha ha! Hey, what's up, man?" And then there was one night where a relative of his, rather inebriated, called the house, and I said I basically convinced him that he had called the wrong number. And I was Bruno Hartenfaust for the entire conversation. And so much so that his relative later called, and we had the answering machine message for a while where he said when he figured out which of Joey's friends was that guy, he was going to do things to him that were unpleasant. We all got a laugh out of it. So those are my memories of The Saint. What are your memories of The Saint, Mike? Are you a fan?
No, pretty much the same. Like, I never saw the show. Like, I remember when the movie with Val Kilmer came out, I was like, oh, this looks cool. And, you know, my dad, you know, was like, oh, The Saint. No, that was a show. It starred Roger Moore. And, I mean, you know, looking at the premise of the show and everything, I can tell this would be, like, right up my dad's alley. He absolutely loves spy stuff. The Avengers is like his favorite show of all time.
The Patrick McNee show, not Marvel's The Avengers, directed by Joss Whedon.
Right, right. Yeah. The one with Diana Rigg and others. And, you know, it's right up his alley. So of course he's like, oh yeah. And then, you know, you hear like, well, Roger Moore, he was another spy. That's weird. You know, whatever. But, you know, The Saint, the movie, looked intriguing, and back when it came out, I was like, oh, I'll go see that, because, you know, it's directed by Philip Noyce, who did, you know, Patriot Games and Clear and Present Danger and everything like that. I like that guy, you know, and then it had, you know, Val Kilmer and Elizabeth Shue in it, and I vividly remember going to see it after school one day, because I was in high school. I was 17 years old when it came out. And I remember going to see it after school by myself, which is something that I frequently did at the Lake Theater. And I remember sitting in theater number 2, which is the big one, and it being almost completely empty, because this is like a 4 o'clock show on like a Wednesday afternoon, you know? Yeah. And sitting there watching it and thinking, this movie's not great. Like, I wasn't like, oh, this is a garbage movie. But I was like, well, that part's interesting, I guess. And yeah, you know. Mm. And it's weird because I remember basically nothing about that movie except, like, at the end of the movie, they had, like, some sort of narration by Roger Moore. Like, he was like some guy on a radio or on a phone or something like that. I remember that part.
I remember Val Kilmer driving away and he had the little saint pin in his lapel.
Yeah.
And he was like smirking at the camera. Mm-hmm. And what was a cold fusion device involved in that one? Because there were a lot of movies where people were trying to get cold fusion devices in the 1990s.
Yeah. I mean, Chain Reaction, would that be one of them? Probably.
That, oh, yeah, with Morgan Freeman and Keanu Reeves, yeah. Pretty sure they were trying to get a cold fusion device in The Saint.
Yeah.
Because that was like the go-to thing before everybody figured out to make all of their movies about the internet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm no huge fan of The Saint, but it's not like I actively avoid it, you know? I'm just, it's not on my radar. It's something which never crossed my path, and it's something which I never sought out. So when this thing came out, I was like, okay, whatever, right? As far as my saintliness is concerned. But as far as, you know, everything else involved with it, like Simon West and Jesse Alexander and, oh, hey, you know, Eliza Dushku's in it. You know, everybody loves mm-hmm. Eliza Dushku. So
I think that's mandatory.
Yeah. So
like you're required to enjoy Eliza Dushku anytime she appears anywhere. I don't. It is a rule, isn't it? For like the quote unquote nerd community. Like
Jay
she's earned
Silent
up so
Bob
much.
Strike Back, you know, she's awesome in that.
She is in that, yes.
She's even in True Lies. She plays Arnold's daughter in True Lies.
That's true. That's true. She's earned her stripes. She's earned her respect among the nerd community over time.
So, you know, I was like, I'm into this, you know, especially because of the Simon West thing, right? And we agreed to do this. And the other day I was watching it and just, I mean, let me describe my journey here. Okay. So I turn it on and I start watching it and I'm like, this is interesting. I mean, I understand that this is, you know, something which is done on the budget of a pilot. And I understand that, you know, Simon West is not working with that you know, Bruckheimer money that he made Con Air with, right? But even with that, there's something about this which is really, really off. You know, like, I'm like, what's going on in this scene? How come literally nobody is talking? And at one point I'm like, is it just the sound design? Is that everything is so too quiet? I don't get it. What's going on? But then like the camera movements and everything, I'm like, they're so, in a sense, generic, and they're so like forced, and the editing is incredibly bad. Like I'm like, what happened to Simon West? What happened to him? You know? And I'm like, what? And the writing too was like, I don't see this. What's going on? Right. Mm-hmm. And I paused it for a second because I forget why. I forget if I was getting like something to drink or something like that. But for some reason, like I paused it and I was getting like suspicious of this movie. I was really suspicious of this movie. And the screen comes up on Netflix and it says The Saint, directed by Ernie Barbarash. And I'm like, what? Because, like, I mean, I have the text that I sent to you when I'm like, it's directed by Simon West. And that was like, I looked that up. Like, I didn't look it up. I saw it on Netflix, you know?
Yeah.
And like, I remember that being a thing. And I swear to God, I saw it on the IMDb too, right? And I'm like, what? How could I misremember that? How could I see Ernie Barbarash and think Simon West? Like, there's no correlation there.
Right. It's not like it was Stephen West or something like that.
Yeah,
It wasn't an easy mix-up there. No.
Right. It's not like Simon West directed the last Saint TV show or something.
Right.
You know? Like, it was just bizarre. So I started, like, you know, searching. I did, like, a Google search, like, Simon West, The Saint. And then I see a link to an article from like 2013 where it's like, watch the trailer for the new, you know, Saint show, you know, directed by Simon West. And I start playing the trailer because this is the other thing that happened in that opening thing, you know, and we'll get into that. But like, as it's happening, for one thing, the effects were really bad. And I'm not talking like, you know, an explosion that didn't look like it was, you know, I'm talking about like, you know, the Saint is talking to Eliza Dushku on a phone.
Yes.
And like her picture is like squished into like to fit the phone.
Yes. It's extremely odd.
And it really felt like every scene that Eliza Dushku was in was something which was done like in front of a green screen, like way after the fact. And that for whatever reason, they couldn't be in the same room together. And I'm like, this is so bizarre. Like, there's a scene where, like, she's, like, taking, like, surveillance photos. And I'm like,
Yeah.
What is going on in the staging of this scene? She's literally 20 feet away from them behind yes. absolutely no cover with like a telephoto lens and like in freaking broad daylight, like everyone in the world can see her taking this picture. Like,
yes.
How do they think that this is going to fly?
Right. It's not exactly like she's even in the bushes. She's like standing next to a car. It's the type of thing where if you were walking down the street and you saw this, you'd be like, why do they have that big camera with them?
That's really weird, isn't it? Yeah.
That's odd. Should I call somebody about this?
Yeah. You know, like, yeah. I wonder what that guy thinks, you know, and it must be, she must
who's
be
looking
shooting
directly
a movie.
At the camera.
Right. Yeah. She must be picture. Shooting a movie. That's the only explanation, right?
Yes. Yeah.
It's so bizarre. So, like, I see the link to this trailer, right? And I start playing the trailer. And for one thing, it's like, okay, Simon West. It says Simon West directed, right? So I'm like, okay, something's going on here. I start playing the trailer, and the trailer is completely different from what I've been watching for the past 20 minutes, you know? Like, it looks like something which is done on like a mm-hmm. professional scale. You know what yes. I mean? And
yes.
then I started doing the research and I found out that in 2015, 2 years after the show was produced, they went back and did additional photography in order to pad out this 45-minute pilot into mm-hmm. an hour and a half long movie. And yep. boy, can you tell.
Was it the beard that gave it away to you?
That was another well? Old thing. Can you explain the beard? Tell people about the beard.
In the very first scene and the first 20 minutes of this, the saint has a beard. And they even address it. She says, oh, I like you with a beard. You look distinguished. And then they have another scene shortly after where they're talking on laptops. And she says, no, maybe I'm wrong. The beard makes you look older. And in the next scene, the beard is gone. And then at the last scene, which thanks to a little title card, you know, is 3 weeks later after the main action, the beard's back. He has no beard for that main section, say that's about pilot length, but the beginning and the end, he has a beard.
They don't even explain. I'm like, how are yeah. they? Because like they even do a thing where like they do that, you know, like, you know, ADR dialogue thing where like yeah. the two of them are talking to each other and then like she turns her back to the camera and says, you know, oh, I see you decided to get rid of your beard. And then yeah. like, it's, and then you hear him say like, yep, or something like that. And then it cuts back to him like smiling and it's like, oh, clearly they did not actually say that dialogue on set. That was added to explain yeah. why his beard's gone. And I'm like, how are they going to explain it being there? Because they explain why, you know, the main agent throughout the entire, because that's the other thing. There's like
yeah,
this American
that,
agent.
That's really interesting, isn't it? I love that 80-yard line at the end. That was great.
I was like, at the beginning of the movie, like the agent, I'm like, oh my God, this is some really, I mean, this acting is not good.
I'll be the last person in the world to bash somebody's like acting or whatever, because there are so many factors that go into it. But I will say that the person they cast as the first agent that you meet, who's obviously, you know, a character added in, was not the right guy for the part.
Yeah.
He didn't sell it. And he had like zero chance of selling it. Yeah. Like, I felt bad for the guy on some level. It was like, oh, man, you really, this is not, I applaud your effort here, but this is definitely not your thing right now. Yeah. And then, yes.
And then he yeah. leaves, and there's, like, another guy, like, a main guy throughout the entire episode, and then it gets to the end, and the first guy is back, and he's like, it was really nice of that other agent to hand this case yeah,
he said something like, this was a dream, he did all of the legwork and I got all of the credit.
Yeah.
And yeah, I was like, well, yes.
That's very meta when you think about it, since Simon West apparently decided to take his name off of this movie, but whatever.
Yeah.
So yes, the movie is, you know, co-written by Jesse Alexander and another writer. And the other writer and director are people who have worked extensively in the sort of direct-to-video market, which makes sense in terms of, you know, who you're going to be hiring to do this. So.
Now, see, the thing is, you mentioned, you know, Simon West took his name off it for obvious reasons to us, but... Like, it actually makes me think in terms of, you know, discussion we had, because there's been so much hullabaloo about, you know, Justice League with Zack Snyder and Joss Whedon and everything.
Yeah.
And you and I actually had a conversation about, like, you know, they could offer the directing credit to Whedon and Whedon could say, no, leave Snyder's name on it. You know, like, and there are all of these different arbitration rules. So even if this heart of the production is Simon West's and it even has his fingerprints or anything like that, if they then bring this other person in to pad it out or whatever, and they're like, well, we got to go to arbitration, Simon West can very easily say, yeah, my check cleared. I'm good. I don't need my name on this.
Yeah. Yeah. And I imagine that if, you know, Simon West was like, no, I directed this pilot, it's my name on it, since like the Directors Guild apparently only credits like one person, I'm sure, you know, he would win. I'm sure if he wanted it to be a Simon West film, it would be a Simon West film, but it's not.
I'm going to side with his decision on this one.
Mm-hmm.
I am.
And the thing about it is like, and this is like, as this was going on, I was like, I wonder if I'm going to be able to tell where, you know, whose is whose and everything like that. But for the most part, like, I really feel like they just stuck something at the beginning and then something else at the end. And, I mean, with the exception of a few lines of dialogue and maybe a few cuts to, for whatever, I feel like the stuff in the middle really is sort of like the pilot intact, because like it's even to the point of like it almost feels that first half hour, and it's about 31 minutes in when the thing starts, and you can totally tell like exactly when. For one thing,
yep,
there's no facial hair, but you know,
yes. Very aside, clear delineation.
Like, even without that, it's like now all of a sudden, you know, the Saint and Eliza Dushku are in the same place at the same time, and you know, all this stuff, and like the photography changes drastically, you know, and everything like that, and it gets a lot wittier, the writing gets substantially better, and
yes,
it's like the other thing about it is like that first half hour really feels almost like a, well, I was going to say comic book prequel, or maybe a, you know, Star Wars tie-in novel prequel or something like that, where it's literally like,
yeah,
here, I mean, like, it, you know, this is this thing. This is this other thing. This guy has a ring. James Remar is feeling guilty about, you know, doing this deal. And now he's going to do the deal, but, you know, live in regret. And, you know, this person is going to train this stuff. And here's some history about, you know, Simon Templar's past and everything like that. And then, like, as soon as the episode proper starts, it's like, let's explain everything that we just saw in dialogue much more elegantly.
Yeah, right?
And it's like, well, then yes. Why did we just see all that stuff?
And I think that your parallel is apt, extremely apt, of, you know, hey, what's happening? Why are we back at this point? Yes. You know, I've got to imagine that for Jesse Alexander, like for any writer, I mean, like you have to be willing to basically, of course, just hand it over at one point and say, oh, okay, here's what I wrote. And, you know, you might be on set for whatever reason or anything, but it's got to be, I can only imagine how weird an experience it has to be to write the core of something like this and have it be so obvious where somebody else came in and like just glued pieces onto your work. Like it's almost like a sculpture where somebody just came in and just like tacked a bunch of stuff on it. That's got to be a weird thing, but it's got to be something that writers go through somewhat regularly as well, doesn't it? Like especially, you know, any level of screenwriter, because of it, you know, you might do like a draft and then hand it over and then it changes in some substantial way.
I guess so, but I feel like with a draft, like with something that's done, you know, in pre-production, it's like, okay, I wrote this thing, now someone else is going to take it and, you know, modify it into something else. Whereas with this, I mean, he wrote the episode, he shot the episode, he edited it, he, you know, everything. It was like a finished work. And then someone else is like, okay, let's make it into a feature so that we can sell it to Netflix or whatever. So let's stick pieces onto it, but sort of leave that center intact. But in some ways, I think it might be better because at least you do have like your finished product essentially untouched, like in the middle. It's like a
right.
It's like a gooey center, or like an Oreo cookie or something.
Well, I mean, I'm intrigued because the production company was the Motion Picture Corporation of America.
I know, right?
I now want like, to go seek like, out their other things because I'm like, is this their standard practice? Just like pick up stuff that's discarded and be like, aha, we can make a movie out of it.
I'm like, the Motion Picture Corporation of America. I mean, that right there sounds like some sort of evil corporation that the saint would be trying to take down, doesn't it? I mean, yeah. How shady can you get, right?
Yes. Yeah, it almost sounds like they kidnap movies and hold them ransom or something like that instead of produce. Oh my gosh. Wow. Okay, yeah, no, see, I have to seek them out at the very least. I have to see some other stuff that they've done because now I've got in my head this almost Canon Films-esque sort of thing, only they don't even develop it from, you know, the idea stage. They literally just, like, pick up other stuff, which in a sense I think makes them more evil than Canon Films because Canon yeah. Films at least was trying their own thing. But, yeah, now I'm really interested in this. I got to hunt them down.
I don't know. It's weird. It's really, really weird. But, I mean, at the same time, I would recommend watching it. I mean, for one, I would kind of recommend watching it just to see because it's such a bizarre thing. Yeah. But even if you're just like, I don't want to, you know, I want to actually see what they were trying to do, what this TV show was going to be like, just skip a half an hour into the thing. Like, yeah. Seriously. Like, it's like 31 minutes. I timed it out. And if you go like 31 minutes in and just start it up there, there might be a few little lines of dialogue which you won't see people actually say on screen where you're like, why did they say that? And I'm curious about like how they intercut some of those like flashback sequences or whatever. But for the most part, I think that's pretty much just the way it is. And that thing, I mean, like watching it, you know, as it, you know, presumably existed originally, like it's solid. Like I'd watch that show. You know, I like watching yeah. it. I was actually like surprised that it didn't get picked up. I'm like, this seems like it has all the necessary pieces. You know?
Yeah, I mean, it does. But I think that probably I mean, for me, it seems like something that would slip in. And I mean this as a compliment. It would slip into like a CBS lineup. Like mm-hmm. this would feel the look and feel of the core of this is comfortable in that NCIS, CSI sort of, you know, sort of look and vibe, and it would totally work. And I agree with you. Like, why? I don't know. I'll never understand exactly how it works. I mean, I'm sure that there were probably test audiences that saw it and they didn't respond well to it and stuff like that. But it's you almost wonder with something like this, is this the type of thing where in the current environment where you have way more options? I mean, because this was produced in 2013.
Yeah.
Streaming's just picking up around then. Like, really, really taken off. And now, now that you have, like, Amazon and Netflix and all of these other places looking for original programming, I almost see this pilot surviving. Or at least being shown on Amazon's thing where it's like, hey, you know, depending on what people watch, we'll pick it up for a season. This is what happened yeah. with The Tick.
Yeah. You know, it's weird. There's a lot of people like this. This just happened recently with Dunkirk, which I know a lot of people were sort of like silenced once they saw the movie. But it's like Dunkirk. It's only an hour and 47 minutes long. How could it possibly be good? You know, like one of those yeah. things.
Sure.
Whereas, like, I'm always like, you know, Brevity is the soul of wit, guys. Let's try to keep things as short as possible. Let's get out of here. Let's get in. Let's get out. You know, this would be great.
It should be exactly as long as it needs to be to tell the story.
Mm-hmm. And for this, in this case, that was like 42 minutes or something.
Yeah.
And yet there's this extra, you know, 42 minutes, which doesn't need to be there at all. But they felt like it needed to be there because they felt like in order to sell this thing, it needed to feel like a movie. But, you know, in this environment with like Netflix and everything is like a thing, I'm like, yeah, come on, bring it on. 48 minutes, just like Amazon does, you know, with things like right. The Tick. It's like, yeah, show me a 48-minute thing. And if this is the only thing that ever exists from this thing, cool. I'm fine with that.
And if a ton of people watch it, maybe they double back and they say, hey, this is a pretty good concept. Let's pick it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah, such is life.
Yeah.
Such is life.
So do you recommend The Saint?
The way that you describe checking it out, yeah. Pull it up on Netflix and start 30 minutes in. Mm-hmm. And you'll have an okay time. I mean, a good time. It is well constructed in that center part, but man, that opening is just baffling. Absolutely baffling.
It's so weird. It's so weird. But yeah. Yeah, check it out. Hey, it's on Netflix. Why not, right? All right. Well, it's been fun talking about The Saint today, but that's not all we're talking about on Trek FM this week. So here's a look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Meta Treks.
I don't like to have too much time, Zachary, to sit and contemplate because I do sometimes end up second-guessing my decisions. But that
second-guess your whole life if you let yourself.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. Absolutely. And honestly, that is a recurring theme, I think, in this season.
Standard Orbit.
Well, I think everything comes back to the naked time for him, and he just can't get away from swords.
Running around with a sword.
He's just running around with a sword. So maybe it was this episode that started that whole thing, but man, yeah, it's kind of an odd thing that he's defined by a sword in his hand, you know?
Literary Treks.
Oh, Matthew, I'm doing just fine. You know, it's always fun every week to hop on here and talk Star Trek books and comics with you. And I don't know if you realize this, Matthew, but this is our 200th episode of Literary... Wait a minute, Matthew. We don't host this show anymore.
And introducing The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
But if I ended up missing an episode, I would record 45 minutes of blank space on my VHS tape, and then I would wait until it came around, and then I would put the episode in its proper order.
This explains so much.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and discover what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on your iPhone or iPad or Apple TV or desktop iTunes app or whatever. And you'll get all the latest episodes as soon as they're published. And please leave us a star rating and a review. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find us on Google, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and most third-party apps. And you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link as well. We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's episode. The best way to contact us is to join the larger conversation on the Babel Conference, which is our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook and we'll come right up. You can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. John, where can people find you on the internet?
Oh, I'm Kessel Junkie Online, and you can also find me co-hosting Words with Nerds with my pal Craig, and you can find me over on the Nerd Party Network co-hosting Aggressive Negotiations with Matthew Rushing and Great Shot Kid with you, Mike Schindler.
Yeah, you can find me over there on the Nerd Party doing that show, and you can also find me on CommentaryTrackStars.com doing a show called Commentary Track Stars, which hopefully will start picking up more frequently now. And you can find me right here on Trek.fm doing a show called The Edge, where we talk all about Discovery. So, yeah, give it a listen.
You should.
Yeah, and you can also find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K. We'd like to thank our associate producers today, Jeff Sutter, Chris Steftenagel, and Norman C. Lau.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. If you'd like to be like Chris, Jeff, and Norm, head on over to patreon.com/trekfm and become a patron of the network. If you go to patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you can get all of the details, including perks like early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more, available through our special patrons website, Patron Zone. You know, it costs a lot of money to host and distribute and edit and, you know, all that other stuff. And, you know, we really couldn't do it without you. So if you can help us out, we'd really appreciate it. So head on over to patreon.com/trekfm and we hope you'll join the team. All right. Well, the saint, Jesse Alexander, you know. It's getting really close to the release of Discovery. We're a month away?
Less than a month at this point. Yeah,
less than a month away. And you know what next Friday is? It's the 51st anniversary of Star Trek.
Oh, right. My gosh. Jeez. There's just as much fanfare as there was during the 50th anniversary. Heyo.
But everyone is, to be fair, everyone's distracted because they're like, you know, 16 days later or whatever.
I'm a lot happier being fixated on a brand new TV property for Star Trek coming on the air, especially one that admittedly looks as good as this one does. Yeah. I'm excited. And I even tip my hat to the fact that I love the ads that show the bow of the ship with somebody standing on it.
Yeah,
that makes me excited because I'm like, that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I don't know. Did you see the T'Kuvma promo thing where he's
I haven't seen it yet. No,
it's really weird because like there's some speculation that like, you know, they're saying like they're trying to change us atom by atom. One thing we must do is stay Klingon. And people are like, is he talking about the augment stuff with the foreheads and the whatever? Interesting. Mm. Or is he being just metaphorical? I don't know. Who knows? I don't know.
I'm excited to find out. I can tell you that.